Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Futures Focus, a fantasy baseball podcast centering around all the top prospects in the game, brought to you by Prospects 1500.
My name is Alex Sanchez. Thank you so much for tuning into the AL Central. And to help us go over the AL Central, one of the OGs, one of the guys that we have brought onto the podcast several times, one of my favorite guys, Kurt Moody of the Detroit Tigers. Kurt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Alex, man. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to join you.
Yeah, you're a great talk to, a great listen, all that good stuff. I'm happy to have you on. It's just going to be us here for the first half. We do have a new correspondent, Adam Halpin, will be joining us at the later half of this episode. But for now, we're going to talk about the Tigers, we're going to talk about the White Sox, and we're going to talk about the Minnesota Twins. And we're going to jump right into it. We don't have a lot of time today to talk about other things. These systems are worth talking about in a lot of detail, I feel like, and I know you have a lot to say about your Tigers. You're going to convince everybody just how good this underrated system really is, I'm sure. That's what you'll say. But news and notes, again, I love my news and notes, but we're just going to jump right into it here because, you know, it's still the off season and I'm ready to talk about these systems. I'm having a lot of fun with them. So let's start with your Detroit Tigers. Let's get them out of the way. For me, not a great system, but you're going to change my mind, I'm sure of that. Isn't that true?
Maybe a little bit. I'm still going to be in the thing of they're not great. I do believe that some of the youth is better than some people think, but definitely not the prospect farm system that once had Skubal, Mize, Manning, Torque, and Green when we had five in the top 100. So no depth there for you.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing to realize is that the system isn't bad because it's the Detroit Tigers. This system is bad because all the good guys have sort of graduated up. There's no Torque to talk about. There's no Riley Green and the others you mentioned as well. We're talking about guys that are much lower in the system. Nobody out, you know, here in your top couple of names are going to be helping out this year. I would imagine if they are, it's going to be very, very late. These are 2024 names, 2025 names. And let's start with perhaps the most controversial thing I've seen here in the list we've done. That's having Jace Young tier one. I definitely don't see him as a tier one player, but then again, I don't know too much about him, just that he's really weird. So you must believe something in this guy to put him here in tier one, which is quite a statement here.
I agree. It was quite the shock to some people that I had Jace at number one, let alone in tier one. You know, I'm blessed. I'm here and based in Texas, and I've seen Jace for the last two or three years play collegiate ball, and I see a lot of things that are the consummate of a Dustin Pedroia, Ian Kinsler, you know, might not be your number one MVP votes, but they're going to get a handful here and there. I just see somebody who's well-rounded college hitter. The thing that people have against him is he doesn't have a true defensive position. You know, Texas Tech tried him at third. They tried him in the outfield. He played more games at second than anything else. I think that's where a lot of dynasty will put him. But it's one of those things that's going to be his Achilles heel because, you know, I mentioned Kinsler and Pedroia. Those guys were great in defense. And Jace is just good at defense. But his bat and his patience is top tier.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't play second base, and now he's a third baseman or even an outfielder if you ask him, or a DH or whatever. I mean, he's going to have to hit, but it sounds like you're confident enough that he will be a legit hitter regardless of position. Or is this assuming that he stays on the dirt, second baseman, and with that, that's what makes him an all-star rather than he's going to be an all-star hitter no matter what? Does that make any sense, what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, it does. If he were to move to one of the corners, his power would have to really increase to see that kind of all-star, whether it's both in dynasty and fantasy or in real life. I think that if he's able to learn second base in the system a little bit better, increase his range and just his mechanics and his feet, I think he has potential to be a top hitter out of that second base position.
Yeah.
One major leaguer that I also see, you know, Luis Arraez, who just went from Minnesota to the Twins. Now, I'm not saying that Jace is going to win a batting title in the first 2 years he's up, but, you know, Luis Arraez doesn't really have a true defensive position, but you got to find a way to put him in the lineup.
Yeah. I think you meant go to the Marlins, right?
Marlins. What did I say?
He said he went from Minnesota to the Twins, which was.
Oh, yeah. That would make no sense at all.
Yeah. That's a great point. Now, I'm looking at tier one. I'm getting on board. I do think he's the number one in the system, although I actually would have Colt Keith up there quite a bit, just because the same sort of thing that Jace Young is what you're saying. I get it. You know, Young's the college bat that's much, well, theoretically closer, although he's kind of in the same level as Colt Keith. But again, kind of where is he going to play? I'm not sure. He's probably not the greatest defensive player, but the bat, especially in this fall, this is what's really gotten me excited, because the injury stopped him from perhaps having a breakout 2022, and the fall he sort of picked up where he left off. How close is Colt Keith to being, you know, let's say at a full season, how close is he to Young in your mind, or is it a pretty sizable gap?
No, I don't think the gap is there at all. The only thing that Jace has on him is just that collegiate bat experience. You know, Colt is only 21 years old, so it's one of those. To your point, his injury kind of curbed him a little bit there in the Arizona Fall League, but he was hitting almost 350 in the Arizona Fall League before that. So it was one of those, I want to see how he looks the spring and into what I would assume would be an eerie double A start the season. Colt has the ability, he could skip double A, triple A, and at 21, 22, could be a late season call-up. Wow. Especially when the Tigers are not going to be, I won't say they're not, they are projected to not be in any playoff hunt. So you got to think roster expansion in September is going to see one of the top three arms and maybe a couple of the very young bats just get their MLB debut to, one, fill seats, but then two, let's see them against some of the MLB pitchers.
Now, I want to ask you about Wilmer Flores. You even mentioned this in your write-up that he had a huge breakout 2021. And we see this a lot with prospects, especially pitching prospects at the low levels, where they have a just dominant single A, high A, whatever. And then they're like, okay, we have Yuri Perez. And this is, I'm not going to use, he's not the name I'm using, but you get somebody that you're that excited about, but then the next year they move up and it's just not quite the same dominance. Something goes wrong, whether it be an injury or they walk more people, and now their stock drops just as fast as it rose up the year before. So what's the deal with Wilmer Flores? I didn't follow 2022 too highly, but I do remember his rapid ascension and people thinking he was a, you know, a top 50, top 75 prospect. And where is he now? And what's this? Maybe a two-part question. What do we do with these pitching prospects in general that have that breakout year so early, but then sort of flatten out as time goes on?
Yeah, and I'm a big subscriber to the there is no such thing as a prospect pitcher, just because of that. It fluctuates so much from year to year. I have Wilmer at number two because in 2021, he was great at high A and double A. I say great because last year I didn't even have him in my top 50. Midseason, I had him, I believe, in the mid-teens or late teens, just because by midseason you saw something special out of him. The biggest thing with Flores is he needs to start avoiding bats, because he was giving up over 7 hits and 9 when he got to double A. And when you give up that many hits against advanced bats and advanced batters, it's a recipe for trouble. You get a lot of soft contact in high A and single A and working your way up. As he gets against better competition, I believe a little bit of it will come back down to earth. I'm still high on him. I've seen great progression in our pitching at double A and in Toledo.
I wanted to take a moment here and talk about our sponsor, Fantrax. Just because of the customization that's available, we run a prospects-only dynasty league here at Prospects 1500 that is just so crazy and so much fun, to be honest. And Kurt, I know you're a part of this, but the possibility of doing this on another website is not possible. Like, it just cannot do it, because not only do you need to have literally thousands of prospects in the system, guys that have never played, you know, above single A, Dominican League, Summer League, whatever. And you also need to have the ability to limit options on who can be brought up, the plate appearances needed to be a prospect, and all sorts of other things that allow Scott to create this league for us and it run perfectly smooth without him having to be a commission that has to change everything manually. Like, it just works the way that it's set up from the beginning. It's fantastic. If you want to run a dynasty league traditionally, it's there, obviously. If you want to run a dynasty league that is crazy, off the wall, best ball, football related, we have a dynasty league where I have four of the major sports combined into one. It's just, you can do all sorts of crazy things, contracts, all that great stuff. And you can do it 365 days a year with Fantrax. So again, completely free. Let me go ahead and reiterate that. It's completely free. You can import your leagues from other platforms. And perhaps the most incentive here that we can give is the ability to put yourself in the prize pool for a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. signed jersey by using the Fantrax.com/prospects1500 sign up link. You will be eligible for that every time. So if you sign up, couple different links, a couple different chances to win. And again, this is not going to be millions and millions of people joining up. It's only going to be a few people using this link. So your chances to win are very, very good, at least better than perhaps winning the lottery or something like that. I don't know. But Fantrax, again, even if you don't win that Vlad jersey, still worth it to have the best fantasy platform available to you. And I'm not just saying that. Like, I truly believe it. It's the best. So again, check it out, Prospects 1500 after the Fantrax.com, and you will be eligible to win for every league you sign up. Now, let's get back to the top 50, AL Central.
Now, we're going to talk about this when the Royals come up here with Adam, but the past as a indicator of future here with the Detroit Tigers. We had the big three with Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Tarik Skubal. And we were ready to give, 1A, 1B, and 1C as an ace of the Tigers. That hasn't really happened. Now, of course, there's lots of time left to go with them. But what do we make about those three and their debuts and their trajectory now to do with the pitchers that are coming up behind them when it comes to Jackson Jobe and Ty Madden and even Wilmer Flores and any other guys that sort of fit that mold? Again, does the past sort of predict the future here with the Tigers, or was that, do you have something to fill us in on why that might have happened?
Well, I think there's two things. One, I completely agree with you. I think the present is going to predict the future, and I think it's good. Chris Fetter, Tigers pitching coach, has kind of put his stamp on all levels of the system. And even with Mize's injury, Skubal had some arm injuries, and Manning had a little bit of a dead arm towards the end. You have to understand, too, those guys are having low ERAs and high Ks pitching for a team whose offense can't score three runs a game. So you have to kind of look in between the stats, and some might say you're spinning the data for your own positivity. But I saw Mize and Skubal strikeouts numbers, Mize's ERA and WHIP on a team that was severely underperforming behind them and giving them support and confidence. I think that changes with the new kind of leadership and regime change within the organization. So I'm still kind of positive on those big 1-2-3s you mentioned. And if Flores, Jobe, and Madden, and even someone a little bit further back like Reese Olson can hop up into join those three, that's a good problem to have.
Certainly. With me being a Braves fan, I did want to talk about Justin Henry Molloy and see what you thought of him kind of with a fresh look, because I'm sure he's not somebody that you paid too much attention to before the trade, and that was for Joe Jimenez. At the time, when I first saw it, I was kind of not too happy with the deal, feeling like, you know, that was a guy that could have been up relatively quickly, and Joe Jimenez certainly doesn't have a huge track record. But as time went on, I sort of realized, you know what, Henry Molloy doesn't have a huge ceiling. He has sort of this good at everything, great at nothing sort of profile going. But what did you take a look at when you saw him added to the Tigers organization?
I see a future third baseman. I really want him to get, I don't think he breaks camp with the Tigers. I think he breaks camp with Toledo. And I would love to see AAA put him at third and see if he can be a third baseman. That's a glaring hole at the big league level for the Tigers with Candelario moving on. And I love this trade. I saw Molloy in the Arizona Fall League. He looks like a man amongst boys, even at Arizona Fall League. And it's one of those, the first move for the Harris directed front office, you know, to get rid of Joe Jimenez, which he was an all-star, right? He had his ups and downs. The Twins basically owned him there for a little bit, especially Miguel Sano. But this is a trade that actually makes me think that we have somebody in charge who knows baseball.
Certainly not good to hear that our stud reliever is owned by Miguel Sano. So I think I like the trade. I'm kind of back to my original thought. Yeah, I think he's a decent player. I think unfortunately what happened was that trade sort of like put him on the map. So I think people are more onto him now than they were with the Braves, because he sort of kind of came out of nowhere in that 2021 where he just like hit at every level. He started at high A and finished in triple A and never stopped hitting, which was impressive, but he definitely was not a high prospect guy going into that season. Is there anybody worth talking about after that name? I know you mentioned Reese Olson, who I've liked for a while as well, but is there anyone below here that, you know, in deep dynasty leagues, we're looking fantasy friendly profiles, preferably a hitter. If you got a pitcher you want to talk about, fine, but guys that, you know, have huge ceilings, even if the risk is extremely high as well.
Hitter Parker Meadows. I have him at 16. I could probably make a case for him to be closer to 10. Meadows had a really good 2021, helping Erie get into the playoffs and succeeding there. I just think he's both defensively in the outfield, but he's a patient hitter and he has just effortless power. Really, really high on Parker Meadows in the next year or two. He's one of those at 23. He could see a call from AAA come September. Even deeper than that, I'm not ready to give up on Gage Workman. I have him at 36. He's 23. He came in with torque out of Arizona State. He can play shortstop, third, second base. He's one of those utility, you know, infielders per se that sometimes get lost in dynasty drafts. I'm just not sold that Gage is done.
That Arizona State team with Workman, Torkelson, and Hunter Bishop. Man.
And what's amazing is none of the three have panned out the way they should have.
I was so high on all of them. And now they all stink. Torque doesn't. We'll finish up here with this. I know it's not prospect oriented, but these guys are still so young that, you know, I want to ask you this question. I'm not talking any shit or anything like that. When I ask this question, don't take it the wrong way. But when you see Julio Rodriguez and you see Michael Harris and you see Bobby Witt and these guys come up and they do more than we thought and extraordinarily more than we thought, what does it feel like to see Riley Green and Torkelson just kind of fall on their face? And Riley Green didn't really fall on his face, but not, you know, nothing that we were hoping in your dreams. How does that feel when other prospects are doing this? Adley Rutschman, another name, whereas these guys have not taken off going, you know, what does that mean going forward for you as a Tigers fan?
It hurts. I will say this about Torque. What I've heard him from him in the offseason is really what I wanted to hear from him all last year. And that's, I've just got to tune everything out and just hit baseballs. In fact, when he was at Arizona State, he kind of had that, I guess, reputation of just kind of being, you know, Torque hit ball hard. And that's what I want out of him. Like, forget about the media, forget about, you know, slumps and stances, and just go out there and be the natural hitter that you were for years. And I think some of it is coaching changes, you know, hitting coaches at different levels, telling them little nitpicky things, without a firm hitting coach at the big league level with something to cascade down. But then I think some of it is just not having fun. You know, when you're not winning, you're not having fun. And when you're not having fun, you kind of lose that edge. I'm hoping that what we saw when he came back midseason, you know, starting the year with the big team, going back down to Toledo to try to find that swing, he came back and he was hitting almost 40 points higher. Now, that 40 points higher was going from 180 to 220. But I'm not, like you said, they're both young. I'm far from giving up or wanting to trade them for bullpen arms.
Right. 100% in on Riley Green, though. Nothing, I mean.
Oh, no, I think Riley is even, yeah. I think the last ranking I had last year, I had Riley at 1 and Torque at 2. I think Riley is not in any trouble at all.
No, me either. But Torque, let me ask you a couple of prospects that, who would you rather? Because Torque, obviously, you won't see him ranked, and I want to know where you value him in terms of some of these other guys. So we'll start with higher-end guys like Jordan Walker. Would you rather have Walker or Torkelson?
Walker.
Would you rather have Miguel Vargas or Spencer Torkelson?
Torkelson.
What about Josh Jung?
Ooh, push.
Okay.
And what that's about, just because I want to see if Josh comes back fully from that injury. He looked really good when he got called up last year. But he's one of those, and I know we'll talk about it a little bit when we get to the Twins in a second. He's one of those where Josh Jung just seems to be hurt.
He looked okay. I don't know if he looked great. He had 38% strikeout rate.
It's pretty high.
204. Pretty high. But I do like him a lot. You like the Youngs, apparently, a lot.
I like ones that I have seen eyes on. You know, yeah. I can watch video and I can read reports. But again, I get to a lot of Texas college baseball games. So I've seen them struggle and I've seen them hit. And
they do look like they can hit. There's 100%. I agree with you. One last name here, just because I think this is kind of where I would have trouble picking. Tristan Casas.
Torque.
Okay. So you're pretty good still on Torque.
I'm still, I mean, don't get me wrong. You asked me Walker. I mean, I didn't even have to blink on that one.
Right. I started high.
Casas, you talk about past and future. Let's see if he can break the curse of the Dahlbeck and the Durans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I would take all of those names I mentioned ahead of Torkelson. And I still, in my mind, have a lot of confidence in Torkelson. I mean, he puts some of the best college tape I've ever seen a hitter do in my entire life. It was just so good. I think that's the limit. That's the line as I'm looking at some other names like Brett Beatty. I'd rather have Torque. Bo Naylor, I'd rather have Torque. Stuff like that. So, it's good to hear that a Tigers fan is still in on Torque. And that second half of season, really has to give you some confidence. And then Riley Green's injury gives you, you know, that was just a fluke thing. Hopefully this is the year in 2023 where we see them take that next step that those other prospects did, because we want you to be happy, Kurt.
Well, I appreciate that.
All right, let's make you happy by talking about your fellow division rivals in the Chicago White Sox and the Minnesota Twins. Let's do the White Sox first, just because this system shouldn't take us too long. Although I do think there's a lot of underrated names here because of development. They have really rose up the rankings for me, at least. I want to hear what you think as well, that you could probably get them for relatively cheap, despite what their like real value might actually be in when it comes down the line in a few months in 2023. But this list was done by Dan Victor, who's been with us for a long time. He knows these guys really, really well. I know that a lot of them, he meets them face to face. He even hosts a few of them down in Single. I wonder if he's still doing that. Couldn't have him on, but he has two tier one players here. I don't know about Colson Montgomery. Oscar Colas, like, I'm okay with it. If you've seen him, and from what I've seen, I saw him at the All-Star game, the Futures game, like, that guy is amazingly powerful, and he hit consistently bombs. Like, I mean, it was batting practice, sure, that I saw him, but man, it was just like, these other guys are hitting the same batting practice pitcher, but they're not consistent like he was. It was unbelievable. But what are your thinking on having Colson Montgomery and Oscar Colas as tier one players?
You know, for all the trash I got for having Jason tier one, that's how I feel about Colson Montgomery in tier one. I think Colson Montgomery is a solid prospect. This is not me slamming him. I think the only tier one in the entire White Sox system, and I ranked the White Sox 25th in our Prospects 1500, you know, farm system rankings. And I think Colas is the only tier one in the system. And to your point, he's impressive. Now, the one thing I'll say to him, is he a career DHer or can he sustain the outfield?
Got a good arm out there. I know that's another good thing about him, is he has a rifle.
Oh, he's got a rifle. Yep. But with a lot of times with that power comes a limited mobility. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he becomes defensively, but I fear him pitching against him for the next 5 years.
I could see a Colson Montgomery on a real life prospects list being a tier one player as a shortstop. Mm-hmm. He's going to stay there. But in a fantasy world, I don't know. I think I agree with you. And the same, probably reverse it for Oscar Colas. If it wasn't a fantasy focused list, I don't think you put him in tier one at all, because, you know, he could be Eloy Jimenez light, and Eloy hasn't even been much to, you know, consistently wise. I mean, I still like Eloy a lot, but what's crazy about Colas is he might start for them like out of spring training.
Yep.
That's how close he is.
And to your point, the one that is the amazing name to me, but isn't for dynasty or fantasy, I love Jordan Sprinkle. I think that pick in the fourth round this year was sneaky good. But he's not going to light up a box score. You're going to have Jordan Sprinkle play just amazing defense and be okay on the plate. But in the fourth round, to get that talented of a defensive player is nice for the White Sox.
Yeah, and the White Sox, you know, this system was so bad a year ago, and then the rise of Oscar Colas, and then we'll get to him in a second here. Brian Ramos is another guy, and then the drafting of Colson Montgomery sort of retooled the system. There's not a lot of openings, and this is a team that thinks it's a competitor. I know last year was not a good example of that. But I still think the White Sox are very capable of making a run. I'm sure they think that as well. And, you know, you have Luis Robert, Andrew Benintendi they signed. You have Eloy, Gavin Sheets. You have
Andrew Vaughn finally might be able to play every day and not have a manager who benches him.
Yeah, that's true. With Tim Anderson, Johan Moncada's got to start. I mean, you have second base open. And, you know, there's not a lot of spots. And it definitely seems like if something is going – you know, if it's on track with what the White Sox want, that these guys are very highly tradable, you know, like they're out the door, which is not a bad thing for dynasty value, but just keep that in mind. But yeah, let's talk about Brian Ramos, another guy that I think you can get for relatively cheap. And I would actually put him probably second in this system. I wouldn't put him tier mm-hmm. one. I'd probably put him after Colas. I think that he has a very similar kind of trajectory that Colas had, where he just kind of blew up. He's done nothing but hit. He has sensational power for his age. I think he was tied for the second most home runs, or might be even tied for the first home run for a 20-year-old in the minors. 22 home runs as a 20-year-old is no joke. And historically speaking, if you're having that sort of power with the nice slash line that he also goes with it, there is a future for you in the major league. So what do you think about Brian Ramos? Do you have him number two? Would you?
I'd have him either two or three. I'd actually put him ahead of Colson Montgomery because I'm with you. 20 years old with 22 home runs. And then he got up to double A and only had maybe – gosh, a month at double A where he also was hitting home runs. So it's one of those, when you can bump up a level at 20 years old, and let's not kid ourselves, the pitching and pitch difficulty going from high A to double A. I mean, there's a lot of people even within our Prospects 1500 who think double A is where the better baseball is. So to be able to maintain that slash through the promotion, I'm with you. Brian Ramos is probably two on this list behind Colas, maybe a push with Jose Rodriguez.
Yeah. But after that, honestly, the system does get pretty bad really quickly after that. I mean, Lennon Sosa mm-hmm. was a guy that had a nice breakout year and even made the big leagues, although he looked completely overmatched. Well, not completely. I guess he looked okay. But after that, like, there's really nobody. I mean, you mentioned Jordan Sprinkle, who I'd done too much research on, so I'll trust you on that. But after that, like, there's not much here, and this is why we rank it so low. Yep. I wouldn't worry about any of these guys down low. I'm not even a guy like, hey, take a chance on, you know, West Canada or something down here. But I'm not a fan of anything after this. Like, it's really bad after
the one pitcher. The one pitcher who I'd keep an eye on coming into the beginning of the year is Peyton Pallett out of there's their draft pick out of Arkansas. Had Tommy John surgery his senior year at Arkansas. Probably was going to be a top quarter of a first round pick if he wouldn't have had that Tommy John. So Tommy John, as we know, is not the death wish that it used to be. So I'd at least keep an eye to see what he starts his first month of the year at. And see how that recovery is, because that guy's got a very lively arm and probably 4 to 5 pitches he can throw.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good call there. Very informative. I like those guys. Well, I don't know. There's not a huge amount of history, but like you said, TJ isn't what it used to be, but at the same time, like, it's not like these guys have proven it at the professional level as well. So there's a lot of risk, but certainly, you know, a guy that was going to be drafted in the first round that has the Tommy John, you could still consider him to be that. I mean, it's just as risky, if not more so, but a good thing to keep in mind. Now let's move on to the Minnesota Twins. This is where we really disagreed on our system rankings. I'm actually pretty high on the Twins, and I'm interested to see why you're a little bit lower. I think that, you know, Royce Lewis definitely is an elite type of prospect. For me, in my eyes, where, you know, injuries have come out. Now, to be fair, it's the same injury, which is very concerning, and it's no joke when it's your ACL and it's the same leg. But, you know, if he was already showing he can hit major league hitting, he's fantastic. He's, you know, if he's healthy, he's an elite prospect for me. Love Brooks Lee as well. I thought that was a fantastic pick for them. And even guys down a little bit lower, like Edward Julian is a nice, he had a breakout 2022. Mm-hmm. You have Austin Martin, people forget about. Matt Wallner, I saw at the Futures game, had incredible batting practice. I mean, after Colas and Jansky Noel, it was Matt Wallner that impressed me the most out of guys that, you know, were not Ellie De La Cruz and those types. So I like this Matt Canarino. If he could stay healthy, he is like the best pitching prospect in the game. Unfortunately, we can't turn injuries off, and therefore he's down here, but pretty decent system. What are your thoughts after I said all those good things? Clearly, you're not as high on some of these guys. So why did you rank it a little bit lower in your rankings?
So I had him 21 out of the MLB teams. And it's truly because I'm not sold on Royce Lewis. I think that Brooks Lee is the top prospect in this system. And full respect for Dave, I understand why he has Royce at one. But Royce Lewis seems to be the prospect who's just potentially the perpetually the prospect. I've never seen Royce Lewis live. I have to disclose that. I've never seen a lot of just amazing tape though on Royce either. I do think Brooks Lee is a tier one prospect. I'll respectively disagree with Dave, but then give the Twins a tier one prospect. I think Brooks Lee is going to be phenomenal, and Brooks Lee could be someone who's quickly into the major leagues. After that, I agree with Edward Julian. Seeing him in the Arizona Fall League, I will not hold the Arizona Fall League Home Run Derby against him, where he put up a goose egg. but it's one of those. I think Julian is a stud at second base, and they have to believe high in him if they would get rid of the batting champion. So there's something that they believe in this system to kind of put the trades forward. Kind of the same way people poke at the Tigers. You know, Alex Kirilloff used to be a number one prospect for the Twins. There's some systemic injuries in their prospects that hurt me. You know, Buxton was the number one MLB prospect, 5 years in a row? And I don't think he's played one full season in the major leagues. Then you have Royce, who tears an ACL and then comes back and re-tears the same ACL. That is, if this was any sport but standing and hitting a baseball, and he's at a defensive position at shortstop or, you know, one of the corner outfields, he has to be able to pivot and run with zero limitations. And I wish the best for the kid, even within our division. I would love to see Royce Lewis prove me wrong and turn out to be a perennial all-star MVP type. I'm at the point of giving up on it.
The injuries are concerning. I mean, you mentioned those two, Kirilloff and Buxton. Trevor Larnach also is another name that was a very highly ranked prospect who dealt with a lot of injuries last year. And these injuries like take away a lot of the value, because it seems like when they're out there after recovering from these injuries, they're taking a long time to get back to being good. Mm-hmm. With Trevor Larnach, like, he came back and just was not the same. Kirilloff hasn't been what we ever thought he was going to be because of the wrist injuries are scary. But then you have somebody like Jose Miranda, who is taking that Edward Julian approach, just a kind of a year or two ahead of him, where he breaks out and then he makes it to the majors and he's pretty damn good and no injuries at all. So I'm not sure what to make about all of this. It's probably just random coincidence on these injuries. But yeah, Royce Lewis, you could turn the injuries off. You know, you have an absolute stud, but it's hard to ignore two ACL injuries. Like, how do you even tear your ACL in baseball? It's like difficult to do once. Imagine doing it twice the same way. But another name, I think that a lot of people have injuries come here as well. It's Emmanuel Rodriguez, where he was on that, you know, upper level Anthony Volpe type of ascension into elite prospectum, and then an injury ends him. But people are still going over those 47 games where he was just sensational. 57 yep. walks and 8 steals, or 11 steals in 47 games. Power, discipline, everything you could want. So, like, that's a tier one player as well, but the injuries scare you off. So in my mind, you could have three like tier one players and you could have zero at the same time.
And he's only 19. That's the beauty of Emmanuel Rodriguez, is yes, he had that knee injury, but he's 19. You know, Royce Lewis is 23, and I'm not saying that's old by any sense of the means in a Major League Baseball player career. It's just at 19, I have more faith that you can heal and get back to 100% more than 23. The names that scare me on this list are those that came over in that Berrios trade with Toronto. Simeon Woods-Richardson and Austin Martin. Let's not forget what type of player Austin Martin was just a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. A lot of people had him in a tier one or tier two ranking until, you know, he had a bad season and a half. And he slid, and rightfully so. But I still look at that trade for Jose Berrios, and it makes somebody within the division as a Detroit homer and Detroit fan, you can tell they have a GM who knew what the hell he was doing and what he wanted back in a trade.
With Austin Martin, like, there's no explanation for it. With the other guys we mentioned, there's the injury, which is concerning to be sure when everybody's getting injured. But at least you have an explanation. With Austin Martin, you had no real explanation.
Nope.
Just a guy with contact skills that forgot how to use them, and then the power and speed sort of have evaporated. I'm just over Austin Martin at this point. I don't think
you're not alone.
Yeah. I do like Matt Wallner, though, and I want to get back to him a little bit because I think he's extremely underrated, where he's already been to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And the outfield is certainly nothing to scare you. If you're a prospect and playing time is on your eyes, you have Joey Gallo and Max Kepler to compete with Trevor Larnach, Alex Kirilloff, and Byron Buxton, that when they're on, I'm sure they're starters, but they have never been on for a consistent amount of time. So playing time is out there, and Matt Wallner is like the next guy up as an outfielder. And he has great, huge, amazing power. And don't forget about Matt Wallner. I think that, you know, one of those guys go down, or Joey Gallo is continuing what Joey Gallo was last year. Matt Wallner, 25 homer upside, just easy. No problem if he can get some playing time. So another name to look out for. So, that, you know, when I look at these names, and you can go back down to Matt Canarino at 11, you know, I thought, you know, all those are, that's a solid top 10. He does kind of tail off at the end of it. Not a lot of names that I love here at the end, but, you know, what's his name? That? I know, you know, Urbina had some helium. Keoni Cavaco was highly thought after when he was drafted. I always liked Kale Rosario. None of those guys have done much. So, yeah, the system depth isn't there, but I thought that the top 10 are solid enough to be in like the mid range. I think I had them at 14 or 15, something like that.
Yep. So, I think all the prospects, we had them at 18 overall. Yeah.
It all hinges on your thoughts on Royce Lewis. Like, I'm not going to let the injury potentially scare me off from a guy that could be an elite fantasy contributor. I'd rather be wrong that way than like, oh, he's injured, he's never going to be good, and then be wrong that direction, if that makes any sense. Like, I'd rather at least bet on the injuries figuring themselves out as he matures and hope that they're freak injuries than the other way around.
The other thing that I guess mentally hit me on Royce was, don't get me wrong, if you can sign Carlos Correa, you do. 29 of the 30 teams. But
28. The Giants.
28 of the 30 teams, and it's still tough because if you have the your number one prospect in the system, don't you want to save that money elsewhere if you believe in that prospect at short?
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation we could have. Well, like,
absolutely,
Rhea going back to the team that knows him the best. They got a huge discount on him.
You couldn't be more right, though, Alex. If you're the fourth or fifth outfielder for the Twins, you probably play 80 games a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, Michael Taylor, Nick Gordon, guys, Matt, you know, there's not much.
Nick Gordon. Talk about a name that, man, just from a hobby aspect, I remember chasing Nick Gordon cards. In releases, thinking that guy was going to be awesome.
It seems all over the place. Like, they could win the division and they could be the worst team in the division as well. Like, who knows?
In contrast to the White Sox, you know, we just got done talking about the White Sox major league lineup. That White Sox team could win 95 games and you wouldn't be shocked. On the contrast, you could have the Twins and that team could win 75 and you probably wouldn't be shocked. It's really up in the air almost every year for the last few years in that central.
Yeah, with the like every other division, it's so obvious who the favorite is, and you know who the worst team is. Like every division, you can figure that out. But with this division, you could be so wrong. It's crazy. I think I had the White Sox going to the ALCS. I think David had them like winning the Central, and they were like the the third, fourth worst team in the division. It's crazy.
And lo and behold, the Guardians are your slow and steady.
The youngest team in Major League Baseball. You know, we're supposed to do that. It doesn't make any sense. So clearly the Tigers will win the AL Central in 2023. That's all we have to say about that.
Hey, the MLB's Future World Series, they already changed it for 2025. I think 2025 was the year that the Tigers were supposed to play the Braves or something like that. I'd have to pull that graphic up. Every year they put the Tigers in like 4 years from now, and it's always shifted to 4 years from the next year.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll go ahead and let you go. We'll take a break here, but tell people where they can find you on Twitter and anything that you want to advertise before we take a break here.
You bet. So you can follow Detroit DET underscore guru underscore Kurt, K-U-R-T on Twitter. For all of your Detroit Tiger minor leagues, some college baseball tournaments coming up. So starting in 2 weeks, we'll have three straight weeks of college baseball tournaments from the state of Texas all up and down my feed. So really excited to see LSU and Louisville and TCU and some of the top college-ranked teams in the next month here in the great state of Texas.
Love it. February and already we're starting to play some baseball. It's better than nothing for sure. Exciting. It's out in the way. So, Kurt, thanks for coming on. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break here, and we're going to come back with Adam Halpin for the Kansas City Royals. Talk a little bit more and finish up the AL Central. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. And we're back. Futures Focus here. My name again, Alex Sanchez. And now joining me is a brand new correspondent. I'd like to introduce him to the world, making his podcast debut. And he just had his first article here on the site for the Kansas City Royals, Adam Halpin. Adam, thanks for joining us and welcome to the team here at Prospects 1500.
Hey, thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
Yeah, I just wanted to, get your lowdown on what goes into the top 50, because we've had, people give their methods and stuff, but your debut article, your first article here on the site, how was that? Was it like more work than you expected? Was it difficult finding 50 names, especially with a system like the Royals, which of course we'll get into, not perhaps the deepest system, but how was that experience for you as a first timer here?
It was challenging for sure. I have a few buddies who, we talk about baseball nearly every day from high school, and which was a very long time ago. And we talk about prospects, and we talk about every team's top, 10 to 20, depending on the conversation. But it was interesting to dig into Kansas City's because I knew a good deal of them. But I also discovered a lot. I had about 75 names that I ended up considering for the top 50. So about 2/3 of which I was familiar with, and about 1/3 was new to me. But it being the first article, I think my history with putting together lists like this is that my buddies will ask me questions, and they know that I'm the most obsessed of the group with prospects and rankings and digging into data and stuff like that. So yeah, I put together lists for them. If they're like, who do you like, this guy or this guy? And is this org's, developmental structure? Like, how do you think of them? And so it was a good foundation to do an article like this as my first, because while it was a ton of work and I didn't want to spare any analysis, it was good to sort of get to know the system this way. So it was a good jumping off point.
Yeah. You know, it, and I'll let you give the intro to the system in general here, but looking at this, the rankings you have here and some of these names, it does remind me of our team that we did last week, which if you haven't checked that out, it's, we did a deep dive on the NL West, but the Colorado Rockies, a bunch of names on there, which, you know, if you somewhat follow prospects, you're going to recognize a lot of the names and you're going to notice how they have fallen down the ranks. And this system too reminds me a lot of that with guys like, you know, Asa Lacy and Eric Pena, who fell off entirely of your top 50. Like, these were guys that were the next big thing. And that's kind of how I've noticed this system is guys sort of have not developed as they were thought they were going to. And I'll give you a chance here now as well to sort of give you the lowdown on the system as a whole. Is it on the rise? Is it kind of falling down? Do you have confidence in this? It's a whole bunch of names here that are interesting in good ways and bad ways. So give me your take.
I think there's no doubt that the org, you know, since they've graduated Bobby Witt and Vinny Pasquantino, Nick Prado and MJ Melendez, it's clearly not as top heavy and strong as it was last this time last year. But I will say that the bright spot in this organization is on the offensive side, where they have put together quite a good foundation the last couple of years and who they graduated. And there's a lot of hitters to be excited about. The first five, my second tier of a group of guys, it's Cross, Tyler Gentry, Michael Garcia, Nick Lofton, and Caden Wallace. That's its own tier for me, and those are all hitters. And I think I did that mostly because the pitching development group has struggled so much and so notably that I couldn't trust putting any of them, even ones who were recently drafted as Frank Mozzicato or Ben Cadorna. I didn't feel confident enough giving them, like, you know, what I would consider like a 50 future value, sort of like a regular. These are guys who could put it together, but I think a lot of it has to do with where the direction of the org, how they're handling the pitching development in the future. And, you know, to be frank, I want to be confident that they can figure this out, because many orgs have really figured out how to make, you know, lower ranked prospects or guys who were drafted after the 10th round, you know, viable. The Yankees do this all the time, right? But for some reason, the Royals can't. And listen, you can't blame Asa Lacy's back or this stuff on the Royals development per se, but this seems to be happening a lot. People will come here from different orgs and will struggle. And hopefully that's not a long-term problem. But if you look purely even at the numbers, at the stat lines from a lot of these arms, and these are guys who are, I'm not even talking teenagers, I'm talking people who are in their early in mid-20s, like Jonathan Bolin, and a lot of these arms have not taken a step forward yet. And I'm still optimistic that some of them can. I don't want to write them off. But when you're putting together a list, I certainly can't feel, with this organization's track record, I can't feel confident that these players, you know, if I look at someone's, like Ben Cadernas, if I look at some of his struggles or the things that he needs to work on, I can't be like, oh, well, they're gonna notice this and they're gonna fix this, and because there's just no track record to prove that they've done anything like that. You know, they've had some pop-up guys. Angel or Angel Zerpa has popped up and has looked decent and looks like he could be a fifth starter or a swing man or a multi-inning relief pitcher. But, you know, they have a lot of arms, so they're certainly not without guys who could put it together. But it's just a big question mark as to who it might be.
Yeah, you mentioned wanting to believe in them, but the track record speaks much louder than what you hope or could even predict going forward. There's just no reason to think that things are going to change anytime soon when you take a look at, you know, Daniel Lynch, Chris Bubik, guys that have just stalled out. You know, you have Singer, who has seemingly kind of been that ace now, established, or at least an ace considering who else is around him. So for fantasy purposes, I mean, you just don't even bother with them right now. I remember getting Mazzucato really, really late in drafts, just to say you could get a first rounder in like the fifth round of your first year player draft was fun. But yeah, like they're just not worth gambling on right now until, even if like you said, Zerpa could possibly be that fifth starter, but you know, what are the peripherals going to be like? The team's still sort of not like guaranteed to be a good place to get wins, and who knows how long he can even last to get a quality start. But on the flip side of that, as you know, as negative it were sounding here, the positives in terms, I mean, you get a lot of headway when you graduate somebody like Witt and then Pascantino as well, who they developed the crap out of those guys. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The future is very exciting. So it does make sense to sort of focus on these position players. So give me, you know, you mentioned those five in your tier two, no tier one players, which I 100% agree with. To me, this is actually like a bottom five system. I think I put them 26th or 27th when we ranked our organizations. I'm sure you probably put them a little bit further up because you're, you know, they're your organization. You know them better than I do. But well, let me ask you that in terms of if you had to put in, where did you rank? Did you happen to rank them?
I did. I'm looking now. I put them. I was not very generous. Where did I put them? 25.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably, I think I had 26 or 27. So we're in agreement there. But, you know, these names at the top, Gavin Cross, Gentry, and Garcia, and Lofton, and Caden Wallace are guys that they're not big names, but can they give you big time performances going forward in the fantasy realm? I imagine they're probably not difficult to acquire, maybe even to be picked up. Like I'm sure, you know, Gentry is out there, perhaps, you know, Lofton is out there as well in some dynasty leagues. So are these guys potentially good fantasy plays going forward?
It's tricky because I would say they could be. I think with Gentry and Garcia and Lofton, these are guys who have generally very good bat-to-ball skills. And that's one thing that Kansas City has done is that if you look down this list, there are tons of guys with double-digit walk rates, just straight, like all the way down. And of course, that doesn't always translate, but it's showing that what the emphasis they're putting on these hitters – and the kind of guys they like, generally speaking. So those are it's like line drive guys. Of course, there's some more of a defense power with some than others, but just line drive approach, bat to ball, and that's a really good foundation. So I will say that Cross to me is, if we're talking first year player draft, he's probably around like anywhere from pick, depending on what you've got, pick 8 to pick 12, I would say, is probably in there for me. And Gentry, I like a lot, but you just don't, they almost feel like the guys who are a year ahead of them or 2 years ahead of them are going to get the first shot. So those guys have to fail, you know, Drew Waters and Kyle Isbell, and they have to fail before Gentry. And in Lofton's case, I mean, it's possible he makes the opening day roster, but there, you know, there's Samad Taylor and Michael Massey who just graduated who are ahead of him. So things would have to go wrong for those guys to get run in 2023. But, you know, these are players because the system is sort of looked at in a certain way, I believe, by most people in baseball that they're not sexy. It's not like a sexy system for people. So there is a way to get sneaky value out of these guys, and even in deep leagues, I think.
Yeah, I really like Nick Lofton and Michael Massey, who's not a prospect technically, I guess, but like those guys, one of them's probably going to be playing every day. I'm assuming Massey, and he didn't have a bad debut by any means. And Lofton has been really successful like his entire time in the minors, but nobody ever talks about him because he was probably older than you thought a prospect should be. He's 24 right now, but you know, if they're playing, and you know, Michael Garcia is sort of like this too, where like, if as long as they're up and playing in the big leagues, like in dynasty leagues, there's a lot of leagues out there where that's valuable. It doesn't matter if they're even performing great. If they're at league average and they're getting every day at bats, certainly they're there for you.
Yeah. And you want that foundation too. Like I think what Garcia, you might look at Garcia's line, you're like, well, this isn't exciting. Like it's not, you know, there's nothing like really stand that stands out. But if you think about deep leagues and you think about the position, I mean, he could move to second. He can play anywhere because he really is a true shortstop. You know, there's a chance if someone gets injured. I mean, his foundational skills as a hitter, and he doesn't chase. I mean, those are a good way to build. You know, it's a good foundation to build upon. So he's you know, exciting as insofar as someone with not like huge over the fence power or 80 grade speed has.
Yeah. So I was looking at your comments. You had a lot of comments for a typical post here, and a lot of them were about.
so I was told after the fact. I mean, I wrote a comment on everybody.
Yeah, that was great. Awesome. I love that. But like.
Scott was like, okay, we're going to take, we can shorten some of these. And he actually wants me to write another whole article about the state of the system. I think just because I had so much, I wanted to share. So
yeah, no, anyway, that's great. It's just surprising. Like how many people were interested in a 26th or 27th ranked system? Because these are names that were pretty big. Like mentioned earlier, Eric Pena, some people were having him in the top 100 conversation after he was signed. And then you have, as a Braves fan, I remember CJ Alexander being, you know, somebody that was going to come up and hit a lot of bombs. Sherwin Newton, the former Met Ranger, mm-hmm. I want to say too. Great signature. If you've ever seen a signature on a Bowman card, it's unbelievably amazing. Go check that. Google that if you have not. He's another name you recognize. Daniel Vasquez got a huge love as well. But like, I'm not wanting to know like why they're off your system, but the fact that you have put them off does show like they take big names. And why is this happening? Why are they performing? Any idea?
Yeah. Well, I think with Pena, with Vasquez, I mean, obviously these guys are still young. There's still plenty of room. You know, this is not, you know, carved in cement here, but they haven't hit yet. So I'm going to favor and I'm going to highlight people who have hit and try not to just put someone on a list for, you know, their signing bonus. And it doesn't mean that they can't, you know, mid-season, you know, if Daniel Vasquez can show that he can hit, he hasn't had over like a, I think he's been below the Mendoza line for both seasons. Then it's something you take into consideration because he can really pick it at short. So, CJ Alexander, it's sort of like the same as it was between him. You look at someone like Brewer Hicklin, it's like a similar profile, but Hicklin's older and closer to making an impact. So I decided to include him instead. So, you know, I was just trying to sort of also spread the wealth a little bit with pitchers and hitters, different levels. And the people who were at the lower levels, I really wanted to highlight some statistical and interesting sort of people that may have not been heard of. Because like you said, this is not a coveted system.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you, like, I'm looking at these ages. Like, everybody's so old.
Isn't that
like
wild?
The average age is like 23, 24 with a lot of 26-year-olds. Where are the international, you know, Jackson, Cheerio, Acuñas that are 18, 19-year-olds that are going to just blow up? Where is everybody here?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, since Pena, I wonder if it was like, okay, we're taking a little bit of a step back here. And I think that that's not necessarily a right decision, but, you know, they've made some purchases. Didn't they go out and get, I forget who they got in 20. I don't remember now. But I do have I've highlighted a couple guys here. Where is my list? But like, there's a guy named Javier Vaz who was picked in the 15th round in this year. He's a college guy. But you know, when you look at these ages too, it's hard to ignore the fact that the pandemic really like just screwed up so much of development. So you're looking at these ages and it just seems like, wow, these 24 in double A and like, what's taking so long? He should be ready. But it's like, you have to sort of, you can't ignore the year, but you sort of have to take it with a grain of salt. It doesn't have the same sort of weight that it used to.
Now, as we talked about how this is a system that seems to demoralize pitching prospects, let's go ahead and talk about another system that does the opposite, where they seem to have every pitching prospect that plays above their weight class and somehow becomes the next great thing, and that is the Cleveland Guardians system. So we go from a, you know, no offense to your Royals, but definitely a bottom tier system to perhaps some of the best. Now, I'm interested in what your thoughts are. This is a system where when I first take a look at it, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a solid system. It's definitely a top 10-ish, 15. And then I start looking at all of these names and how deep it is. And, you know, taking a look at some of these tier three names, I don't know, you know, this is Sean Clancy, who wanted to get him on the podcast too. He just wasn't available, but like, there's a lot of players that I would bump up from his tier three to tier two. So to me, after I looked at it a little bit closer, I was like, okay, this is like a top six or seven system, maybe even higher. And then I could see people getting crazy two and three. So the Cleveland Guardians, you know, in division rivals to the Royals, what are your thoughts on their system? Just how good is it in your mind?
That's interesting you say that. I ranked them number two because I think that they have profound – I think that their ability to develop pitching is astounding. And it's like if you don't know who you want to take, who you want to take a flyer on, or when you look at who they draft and you think, oh, they have a type typically that they draft – they're like, well, they're going to add in a year, they're going to add 5 miles an hour, like yeah. Just to his fastball. And it's just incredible. So I think I look at Guardians player in the system. And I just automatically bumped them up in my brain just because of what they've been able to do with their development. The one thing I will say, going back when you asked me about young players, I just looked at my list. The two people I will mention, if you're looking for like sort of deep, super deep leagues, there's a player that was drafted in the 20th round named Austin Charles, who is a shortstop and right-hand pitcher, who it looks like they're going to keep him at short, but he can like touch 95, and he's really, really interesting. It's a very long-term project, but he's 6'6", and he's very interesting as a talent. And the other player who I think should be just, you know, looked at and kept in the back of your mind is who did I have out here? I wanted to point out, where is he? This pitcher, and he's not young, but it's a pitcher named Noah Cameron. And if you go and look at his numbers, he's a 23-year-old lefty, and he was only in high A, but he was drafted and had Tommy John right out of the draft. And he's sort of like deception, and you know, he's not like touching 98 or anything like that, but he's really, really interesting, and his K rates are insane. And he's someone to keep an eye on for this coming season. So, with the Guardians, yeah, like you said, looking at tier three, which I'm looking at right now, like Cody Morris at 11, who I love. And it's crazy to think that he's 11 in this system. And I've actually seen him ranked lower in some systems. And it's like, they're so flush with talent that, you know, he's currently listed on roster resources, like their long man, you know, yeah. Like their spot starter. And he's like, you know, other than having like an injury history, he's like ready to go and be a starter and almost every other team, you know, it's just incredible what they're capable of. And it's, yeah. They're like 10 guys they could throw on right now.
Yeah. The pitchers are just wild. Like Espino has the chance to be like the number one starter. Gavin Williams has a chance to be number one starter. Like you said, they seem to develop better stuff as we go. What's interesting to me is like how similar some of the position players are with Brian Rocchio, with Gabriel Arias, with Angel Martinez, and friend of the podcast, Tyler Freeman. Like they're all the same player, just like some of them switch hit and some of them don't.
Yep.
None of them have a lot of power. and they all play on the infield. So they all can't play on the infield, especially when you already have a couple of great infielders in Jose Ramirez and Andrés Giménez. Like, you only have one more spot, really. And I don't know where they're all going to play. And they all kind of do the same thing. So it's whoever arrives first. Out of those guys, like the light, not none of the power guys, none of the outfielders, do any of those guys stand out in your mind? You know, Sean has them really ranked far apart. Rocchio is at 4. Angel Martinez is at 10. Gabriel Arias is at number 6. And then obviously Freeman, I don't think he has ranked. Although I think Freeman probably still has like eligibility, but
he didn't rank him.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that's because he was graduated for right. him. But in your mind, like, or anybody else I didn't mention that maybe I forgot to talk about, like Jose Tina probably fits.
Jose Tina. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, they you're right. They do love a certain type of up the middle talent, which, you know, from a value perspective and trade value, makes a lot of sense. They're developing these players well. And like, just looking at just some of the write-ups, it's, you know, it's contact, glove, mm-hmm. you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 homers from depending on the player. I really like, is it Angel or Angel Martinez?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
I think he's interesting. I just like his contact profile, but I also think he has pop. Like, I would say Freeman is probably more of a second baseman. So it's possible that. Who do they have playing second base this year? Who do they have slated to start?
I will tell you right now. They have they got Ahmad Rosario at short and Andrés Giménez at second.
Oh, they have Giménez at second. Jose
Ramirez at third. Yeah. I mean, I don't really believe in Rosario. I mean, he could be okay, and he could also fall off in my eyes. But
yeah, there's like obviously like massive risk with him, but. I mean, all three of them were great last year. So, you know, you have to just, you don't want to hope anything, but you have to sort of have them as insurance. And there's no reason to not have them as insurance because they're all, Rocchio is 22, Arias is 22, Angel Martinez is 21, Jose Tan is 21. It's just like, they're so rich. Mm-hmm. So it's almost hard to pick, but I do like Martinez a lot. Yeah. I'm not sure Arias is going to be able to hit like the others.
I still like Rocchio a lot. I think he's my preferred.
Yeah, I do too.
The beauty is that, like, even though they're infielders, they should be able to play the outfield if need be, and there's a DH involved, although they got both Bo and Josh Naylor that are probably taking up those positions for the foreseeable future. But yeah, if you want to make this team, you should be an outfielder because they haven't had outfielders in years. It's been
And why don't they move? Why wouldn't they move one of these guys to center?
I'm sure they will.
I mean, they might.
I'm sure they will. Yeah, but I mean, you look at the outfield right now. You have Stephen Kwan, who was a revelation last year for sure. He's definitely playing most of the time. Perhaps you can platoon him. But Miles Straw and Oscar Gonzalez. I mean, Oscar Gonzalez was okay, I guess, last year. But certainly. A one-hit wonder possibility, not to offend anybody, but you know, we've seen guys like him come and go, but one of these prospects. But the problem is they also have their best prospect who plays the outfield, and that's George Valera, who I absolutely love, and I think if you can get him for relatively cheap, you should do so now. I've seen him, you know, trend downwards the last couple of years just because his progress hasn't been super rapid, but he has a phenomenal swing. He has one of those swag type of attitudes that just ooze confidence, and he's fun to watch. He's loose. He knows what he's doing, and he just hasn't exploded at any level yet, but he has not failed at any level yet. And I certainly think this is the year we see him in the majors. But I still like him a lot. Are you in or are you out on George Valera?
I'm in. I don't think he's going to be a superstar. But that doesn't matter. I think that he doesn't have, you know, a lot ahead of him to leapfrog. I'm just looking at Oscar Gonzalez's page, and I remember him having like a crazy So he had a 122 WRC plus in 382 plate appearances. He had a 3.9% walk rate, but he only struck out just under 20% of the time. But, you know, he's running a 345 BABIP, which is not insane, but it's certainly high. You know, I think he's going to get a shot, but someone like this with this approach, you know, it's like he has a bad month and up comes Valera. You know, they'll give someone else a shot.
Mm-hmm. So, I agree 100%. Absolutely.
I don't know when Valera will make it. Like, if Gonzalez plays fine and they're, you know, in the driver's seat in that division, which they should be, is Valera up in June? I don't know. Again, there's not much ahead of him to block him if he's lighting the world on fire, because he just got promoted to AAA at the end of the year, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think this year would be the year. And I guess my thought will be if he's adjusted and he looks good, that he's up in June.
Yeah. I mean, I just see, like, there's so many ways that these prospects can make it. It's like Stephen Kwan, yeah, great story, doesn't strike out, but just one thing has to go wrong for him, and now he's a fringe player, a fourth outfielder type of. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen because he's such a cool player in this modern day and age, but same time, he doesn't do anything like remarkably well besides just always make contact. And if he loses that, then he's done. So you just have to, you know, kind of get to the big leagues that way if you're on the Guardians. And, you know, like you said, you can go down this list. Let's, you know, just rapid fire here because we're going really long for how I promise I would keep you. But, you know, John Kensey, Noel down there in tier three, I'd put him in tier two. I saw him at the Futures game. That guy is mammoth. He was hitting balls farther than anybody except Oscar Colas was the other guy that were hitting it to the top of Dodger Stadium and all. You know, the other prospects who have all this power, you know, like Churio and Jordan Lawler and all these great guys were like hitting them out for sure, but like a couple rows. But Noel and Colas were just bombing them out. He is huge and he's going to strike out a ton as well, but I think he's a big leaguer. You know, guy Will Brennan, he had it 17, which I get, like, maybe overall when these guys hit their ceiling, he's a 17th plus player, but like he's ready to go right now in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, he's going to get playing time and he could break out. He's got lots of power. Low K rate, not bad. And then down here, you know,
yeah, he's not the ball.
Yeah, sorry, bat to ball. I kind of misspoke there. You're right. More bat over power. But, you know, Petey Halpin back down here, speedy guy. I remember when he was drafted, it was fun. Tanner Burns, our old co-host David Gasper loved Tanner Burns down here as well with Carson Tucker, Cole Tucker's brother. Fun guys all around the system. It's fantastic. Anybody else catch your eye that you kind of want to talk about here with the Guardians before we sign off?
Yeah, I'm looking at some of these names down here. Can I remember Aaron Bracco? I haven't heard about him in a while. I'm interested in, gosh, I wonder what Tanner Burns, if he can regain some of what he had before. I mean, health has been such a problem with him. But I think the most important thing to notice is that any of these guys, like Justin Campbell, who they drafted and who's gigantic, and who's the other? Oh, Parker Messick. These are guys who can just, you know, their whole arsenal can just take such a leap. So they're so important to sort of just see what happens with them as soon as, you know, 2 months into the season, they can make a jump. And I think it's important to watch what they can do, because, you know, Campbell with his frame, and he doesn't throw hard, but these are the projects. Like, it's like, let's draft this like beautiful athletic freak, you know, like let's see what we can do with him. And you could have another Tanner Bibee. Do you know what I mean? Like, you turn around and boom, a guy, he's like a no shit top 100 prospect now, who was a fifth round pick, just pops. So I think it's good to look at, see what Campbell and Messick can be, you know, these are guys who, you know, do you remember when Shane Bieber was drafted? Everyone's like, oh yeah, he's like a back of the rotation starter. He's like a soft tosser. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, like a top five starter when he's healthy. So yeah, it's wild what they can
That's
do.
That's sort of the problem too, to kind of wrap this up with, you know, some guys will look at the system, I think, in Dynasty and say, well, if you're a Cleveland Guardians pitcher, I'm going to take you. But they develop so well that it sort of creates this logjam up front. Like, there's really no way to get to the big leagues right now unless there's injuries and stuff like that. And even then, like, if you're a Gavin Williams or a Daniel Espino, you're still going to, like, it's going to take some time. You're not going to just jump up like, let's say, Andrew Painter might for the Phillies. They take a long time to get to the big league. So be careful with that. But it's still a very sound strategy to just go ahead and pick up guys that look, you know, the part, like you mentioned, athletic freak with Campbell, guys that have utmost control. Like, they have a good to great skill with perhaps limited, you know, seemingly limited other skills that the Guardians can bump up, because that seems to be the past. And you're better off betting on the past than you are with, like, the Royals and hoping that they just magically turn it around for you with your one guy you got for free on Dynasty.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
I think similarly to the last thing I'll say is that similarly to the Rays, the Guardians, obviously a little bit better, but the Guardians don't sign extensions that much. So the thing you have to realize too is that there's probably going to be more turnaround. You have to be patient. Obviously, like you said, it's like they don't rush a lot of these arms up because they have great arms. But, you know, Espino will get a shot to do this, and it just might be later than most of us want. And also with his injuries, it would be prudent for them to.
His injury scares me a lot. How high do you put Espino? I actually would take several other pitching prospects ahead of him, because guys that throw that hard and have injuries scare me a lot.
Yeah, I think he's probably in the second tier for me, because I just think the stuff is so absolutely nasty. I think if Painter and Yuri Perez and Grayson are in a tier, I think that he's probably in that next tier with Bobby, I'm not looking at a list, but Bobby Miller.
Right, no, sorry.
And no, it's fine. Bobby Miller, and I think he's probably somewhere in like the 30s for me, maybe. But I still think he's a top 10 pitching prospect, just because it's like, when it's on, it's disgusting. Now, we've been burned. Fool me once, fool me twice, fool me a million times. It's like, we still go back to the well, because when we see it work, it all looks so good. But I do think that with the Guardians org, that hopefully that he can shake these little things that keep happening to him, and truly be an ace for them, like be the next Bieber or whatever.
Yeah. Well, if there's an organization that's going to kind of figure out how to cure injuries, it's probably the Guardians. So definitely not. I can't fault anybody for going after an Espino, but just, you know, in another organization, I might be a little bit more concerned. But anyway,
no, that makes Adam. Sense. Totally right. Totally fair. And Williams, there's something about Williams that is maybe, like, you know, I don't want to say safer, because no pitcher is safe, but with the frame and with how he throws, it's like, oh, maybe Williams is a safer bet, and you'd like sort of, you'd put your risk where you know, where you want it.
Yeah. I take Williams over Espino in a vacuum.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, Adam, thank you so much. It's a pleasure. It's actually the first time we've talked as well, so it's been nice getting to know you here. You definitely know your stuff. I'm very impressed with the knowledge you're able to throw down on here. So welcome to the crew. Anything that you wanted to push here, maybe give your Twitter handle, anything that you're working on as we close up shop here.
Sure. Thanks, Alex. It's good to talk to you too. The next article I'm working on is sort of a little bit of a state of the system, and it's going to sort of talk about how the Royals need to spend money. but I want them to do what the Texas Rangers have been doing, as in last offseason, and what before them, what the Phillies did. It doesn't always work. Like, you can't just buy free agents. But Texas noticed that there was a dev problem. I think that they noticed that, because for whatever reason, like, pitchers weren't developing, and this is a similar problem with the Royals. So I'm going to be sort of touching on, hopefully, touching on how they can sort of get themselves back to relevance sooner. And yeah, I'm on Twitter at Adam Halpin, just my name, A-D-A-M-H-A-L-P-I-N. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
That's going to do it for us here on Futures Focus. My name, Alex Sanchez. Thank you so much to Kurt and to Adam for coming on, talking about their prospects. Sorry for the little bit longer of an episode. Hopefully nobody's complaining, but we will be back next week, continuing our progress here on the top 50 lists for each division. This is the Futures Focus podcast, brought to you by Prospects 1500. We'll see you next time.